eKatra Foundation presents the eKatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eKatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into a book that honestly felt like more than just a book when it came out. It was huge. We're doing a deep dive into the sources behind Glennon Doyle's Untamed.
Oh, absolutely. It landed with such impact, didn't it, right? As the world was kind of resetting. Yeah. And Untamed just tapped into this this feeling so many people had, particularly women. It's more than her story.
Yeah, it's like a guide almost.
Exactly. A guide or maybe a manifesto for self-liberation. It spoke to women who felt they'd been, you know, trained to be quiet, to be tame.
And the core idea, it feels both revolutionary and really old at the same time, is that this inner voice, this intuition women have, it's not something dangerous or chaotic.
Right. Not something to be managed. It's actually this deep, like primal power, something to be trusted, something you unleash.
Okay, so that's our mission for this deep dive. Trace how Doyle got there, figure out the core philosophy she's laying out, and pull out the big lessons about living authentically, right? Mm. Allegiance to yourself.
Exactly. Let's unpack it.
So Glennon Doyle. Before Untamed really exploded, people knew her mainly as an author and activist, founder of Together Rising, which is a huge grassroots nonprofit.
Yeah, and her public image was very much tied to being this Christian mommy blogger, you know, very celebrated, and also defined by her marriage, choosing forgiveness, staying committed, building what looked like this perfect life after overcoming addiction.
Which sets up the central conflict of Untamed perfectly, because the book is all about how she had to basically tear down that entire public structure.
Completely dismantle it, all to listen to that inner voice she calls the knowing. She stopped trying so hard to be good because, well, the performance just wasn't sustainable anymore. It was costing too much.
And she gives us this language, like cages, for societal expectations. It's a really useful frame.
It really is. It helps you name that feeling of being confined.
It's quite the journey she maps out from, you know, totally abandoning herself early on to this fierce self-allegiance later. Yeah. So let's follow that path. How did the cage get built in the first place?
Well, she talks about being a really sensitive kid, feeling everything like way too intensely. And the world pretty quickly teaches a sensitive girl that she's a problem.
That she needs fixing.
Exactly. So her first coping mechanism, her survival skill, was learning to numb those feelings, to basically abandon herself to fit in.
And that shows up really starkly, really early on. Bulimia at age 10.
Yeah.
Then heavy drinking later, teens, 20s.
Mm-hmm. The pattern was set. Pain is bad. Run from it. Escape your own skin. That was the strategy.
So then comes this first big turning point, age 26. Staring at that positive pregnancy test.
Yeah, she paints this picture, cigarette, beer in hand, and this moment of just stark clarity. And she chose sobriety. She chose life. And she threw herself into that socially approved cage. The mother, the devoted wife. She married Craig Melton.
And weirdly, committing to that structure, that cage, is what made her famous. She starts the Momastery blog in 2009.
Right, writing super honestly, like raw confessionals about what she called the brutiful, that mix of brutal and beautiful in everyday life.
Yeah, I remember that term.
And that honesty led to her first couple of best-selling memoirs.
Carry On, Warrior was the first big one.
Exactly. And then Love Warrior in 2016 really cemented her public image. That book was all about fighting to save her marriage after finding out about Craig's infidelity. She became this symbol of commitment, forgiveness, sticking it out.
To the point where she was literally about to go on tour for Love Warrior, promoting this message of staying, of making it work.
And that's when the plot twist hits. Like maximum dramatic tension, peak success, promoting staying, and she meets soccer star Abby Wambach.
And it wasn't gradual, was it? She describes it as immediate.
Instantaneous. No. Not like a logical thought process. She calls it a physical click. It was the knowing, that inner voice, just screaming a truth that completely blew up her public life, her book, everything.
Wow. So that connection was the spark, the catalyst for demolition.
That's the word she uses, demolition. The rest of the book isn't really about fixing things. It's about tearing down and rebuilding, ending the marriage, falling in love with Abby, creating a new kind of family, not a broken home, but she calls it a new island, built on truth.
It's fascinating how that personal story then really shifts into something more philosophical.
Yes. That's where it gets really interesting. The memoir kind of transforms into this text about a way of living. Let's dig into that, the core ideas. It really hangs on this tension she sets up between the knowing and the cages.
Okay, we keep saying the knowing. How does she explain what that actually is? Because it's not just wanting something, right? Or being anxious.
That's a great question. She's clear. It's not just wishful thinking or fear. The knowing is quieter. It's that deep primal intuition we're trained to ignore. It often feels like a simple, calm truth in your body. A feeling.
Okay. In the cages.
Those are the things that keep us from the knowing. Any social construct, basically. Yeah. Religious rules, traditional gender roles, even fixed ideas about marriage or success.
Mm.
Anything that limits your full self, your full power. And the trick is, we're taught these cages are safe, that confinement is safety.
So to get out of the cage, you have to stop running from pain, which is the complete opposite of what she did for decades.
Exactly. It flips the script on pain entirely. In her untamed view, pain isn't the enemy. It's not a problem to solve or numb. It's sacred. It's a messenger.
An alarm system.
A crucial alarm system telling you where you're betraying yourself, where you're out of alignment. So the goal isn't to be happy all the time. It's to feel it all, to sink into the discomfort. And see what it's trying to tell you.
Wow. So the driving force behind everything was just this deep, deep need for authenticity, to let that quiet knowing finally be louder than all the outside noise.
That was the core of it. And there was a really powerful secondary driver, too, related to her kids.
Even mother.
Yeah. She realized staying in a life that felt false was teaching her kids, especially her daughters, that women are supposed to sacrifice their own truth for peace or for how things look. She saw that modeling actual freedom, living her truth, was the best lesson she could offer them.
That makes perfect sense. And it really sets up these three key moments you mentioned, the turning points where we see this philosophy actually play out, the demolition in action.
Right. The first one is the big metaphor that runs through the book, the cheetah at the zoo.
Tabitha,
yeah. She sees this incredible, powerful cheetah just stuck in a pen, tamed. And part of the zoo show is Tabitha chasing this fake pink bunny tied to a Jeep.
Oh, wow.
And Doyle just sees herself, this wild thing, made tame, chasing these meaningless fake bunnies' approval, being seen as good, fitting in. It just crystallized that feeling of being caged.
That image is so sticky. It really captures that feeling of performing, doing things that don't really matter for external validation. Okay, so that's the metaphor. The next turning point is the big one, meeting Abby Wambach.
The catalyst. And she stresses this wasn't like, oh, I'm unhappy, maybe I should explore this. It was pure body knowledge, visceral, that click she describes, a recognition.
A point of no return.
Exactly. The two lives, the performed one and the true one, just couldn't exist in the same space anymore. It forced the choice, keep pretending or follow this terrifying, life-changing truth.
Okay, and the third one brings it right back to her kids, to parenting. Tish wanting to quit soccer.
Yeah. Her daughter, Tish, 10 years old, says she wants to quit. And Doyle's first instinct, totally conditioned, is to give the standard speech, you know, winners never quit, stick it out.
Right. The default script.
But she catches herself, stops. And in that pause, she chooses differently. She decides to honor her daughter's inner voice, her little knowing, instead of just steamrolling it with what she's supposed to say as a parent.
And doing that for her daughter?
It cemented her own decision. It was this small act, but it was revolutionary. It showed her how to honor her own knowing, too. It grounded the whole philosophy in real life.
So if we zoom out, what her story teaches us about facing hard times, it feels really different from the usual advice. It's not about just being tough and pushing through everything.
No, it's almost the opposite. She pushes for surrender and vulnerability. That phrase she uses, we can do hard things, people sometimes take it as just grit. But she means acknowledging how hard it is, feeling the pain of it.
Right. Not pretending it's not hard.
Exactly. And then finding the strength to move through it, not around it. Often that means leaning on your people, your community, her pod, she calls it. Hardship isn't something to avoid. It's necessary. It's the fire that forges you into who you're becoming.
We do need to pause here, though, and talk about the reality of making such huge changes, especially when you're a public figure like she was. It wasn't simple, and there was backlash.
Oh, absolutely not simple. The cost of that authenticity was real. A lot of her followers, people who really connected with Love Warrior and her story of saving her marriage, felt, oh, betrayed.
Yeah, you can see how they would. Accusations of hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm. And we also have to bring up the critique about privilege, which is valid. Being able to completely dismantle your life, your marriage, your career, your home, and rebuild it. That takes a level of financial safety, social support that just isn't available to everyone stuck in a cage.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
Though it feels like She acknowledges that cost, that conflict, as part of the price of integrity for her. So if we think about her biggest failure, maybe it wasn't leaving the marriage.
Maybe the real failure was the decades before that, the decades of not listening, of self-abandonment.
Right. And the recovery isn't a one-time fix, but this ongoing daily practice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Choosing authenticity over applause again and again. It's about reversing that lifelong habit of putting everyone else's expectations before her own truth.
Okay. So let's bring it all together. For you listening, what are the big takeaways here? Let's try and distill three final powerful insights from this deep dive into Untamed.
Okay. First, let's go with an emotional insight. I think it's the courage to live in the brutiful, to actually sit with those messy, conflicting emotions at the same time.
Like the grief for what you're leaving behind and the excitement or terror about what's new.
Exactly. The grief for the old life, the joy and fear of the new love, the new path. She argues you can't shortcut that. You have to hold both the beauty and the brutality to really live fully. You can't numb the sorrow and expect to feel all the joy.
Okay, that's powerful. Second, an intellectual insight, maybe the fire drill story.
Yes, that anecdote is so sharp. How society trains girls, especially, to ignore their own internal alarms or gut feelings if someone in authority seems calm.
Like the teacher in the fire drill. The alarm's blaring, but the teacher says it's fine, so you sit tight.
Right. So the intellectual takeaway is learn to recognize your body's alarm system, that gut feeling, that intuition, and crucially learn to trust it, even when everyone around you is saying, it's fine, relax, it's just a drill.
Trust yourself over the external authority.
Okay.
Okay. And finally, a universal insight, something really practical we can all use.
I think it has to be the foundation of it all. Your first allegiance must be to yourself, period.
That sounds selfish, maybe, but she argues it's not.
It's the opposite of selfish, in her view. Honoring your own truth, your own needs. That's not just okay, it's necessary. It's the bedrock of integrity. It's how you become a solid, honest presence for the people you love instead of performing for them.
Your first allegiance is to yourself. That really sticks. And as we wrap up, that leads to one final thought, building on her idea about imagination.
Yeah, she talks about imagination as a revolutionary act. So the provocation for you listening is this. Take a hard look at the structures in your own life, your job, your relationships, the expectations you live under.
The cages.
The cages, yeah. And just for a moment, forget what you're supposed to do. Forget what everyone else needs or expects. What's the truest, most beautiful story you can imagine for your own life right now?
Not necessarily achievable tomorrow, but just imagine.
Just imagine it, because having the courage even to imagine that truest story beyond the limits of today, that's the first vital step toward actually living it.
That's a really powerful place to leave it. We definitely encourage you to explore Untamed and Glennon Doyle's work further if this resonated. That was The Deep Dive. Thanks for joining us.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.